Hello, and welcome to KRFY Community Conversations. This is the alternative program to KRFY's normal morning shows that would happen on Tuesday, Wednesdays, and Thursdays. This is an alternative because of COVID. We're doing pre-recorded interviews. We ask that you have patience with us because we sometimes have glitches, gurgles, things like that due to the internet connections and Zoom, which we're doing. With that said, I'd like to introduce our morning show community conversation topic today. And that topic is the perplexing puzzle of feral cats. And I must point out that you would normally hear me, Julie Calamine, with my normal morning show host, who is Phil Huff. But Phil has graciously allowed me to ask Susie Prez to be the co-host this week because we are both more familiar with the topic than he is, and it's an interesting topic. So hello, Susie Prez.
Well, hi there, Julie. It's fun to be on Zoom with you today to talk about a subject that we have been discussing for a couple of years now. So here we are, finally getting to get some information behind our perplexingness.
That's right. And before we introduce our guests, we're going to tell a relatively short story about why we wanted to have the perplexing puzzle of feral cats as a morning show topic. It's because Susie and I have both had feral cat problems, me in Sagal outside of town and Susie in town. And both of us have had some problems trying to deal with our feral cats. And Susie's is the bigger problem. Let's have a quick summary of what we've been going through, Susie. You go for
it. For the last couple of years, I've noticed, and I've kind of brought you into the picture, Julie, that there's been a lot of cats in my neighborhood. And you can tell when it's a feral cat because they're not that healthy. They seem very skittish. You can't get them to come to you. And every spring, all of a sudden, there's a bunch of kittens running around in the neighborhood, too, because you know that those feral cats got pregnant and there's no control. And if you start thinking about it, you can see that it could spiral out of control fairly easy, where we'd be overrun. And not only is it cruel for cats to not have homes and be well cared for, but there's a whole list of other problems that feral cats bring to the table. And so you and I started to try to think, how can we take care of this problem? And we haven't succeeded, but we're still curious and we're going to get to the bottom of it.
Exactly right. And I think that's enough of our story for the moment, because other parts may enter in as we talk with our hosts, our guests, and I'd like to introduce them now. So we have three great guests for this topic. The first one is Devin Laundrie. Devin is the Director of Shelter and Medical Operations at Panhandle Animal Shelter, Panhandle Animal here in Sandpoint. So hello, Devin.
Hello, how are you?
It's great. Great to have you here. And with her is Dr. Emily, and I hope I'm pronouncing it right, Pellet. And who is the new shelter veterinarian? Emily, help me out with your pronunciation.
Hi, it's just Pellet.
Okay, Pellet, like a pellet. Very good. And our third guest, and I'm so happy to have her, is Officer Tennyson, who works in animal control with the city of Sandpoint. Hello, Officer Tennyson.
Hi, it's nice to be here.
I know, it's great to have you. So having introduced you all, can you give us just a very brief bit of information about yourselves and how you came to be working in the area you're working in? And let's start with you, Devin.
Sure. I have been with the shelter for about 5 years, and my background is veterinary medicine, and my husband and I backpack quite a bit and frequented this area, fell in love, and moved here about 7 years ago. And we started out in Coeur d'Alene and thought that Coeur d'Alene was still a little bit too busy for us and moved further north. So,
okay. And so you ended up here at the animal shelter. We're lucky to have you. And we'll move on to Dr. Emily. You're a new hire, Dr. Emily. How did you come to Sandpoint area?
That's a great question.
Begging and pleading.
I did a shelter internship last year and was kind of hunting for the shelter that offered the right mix of what I was looking to do and offer and kind of the ways that I like supporting communities. And PAS just checked all the boxes that I was looking for. So here I am.
Very good. And you're just getting going. We'll learn more about that shortly. And finally, Officer Tennyson, you're at City of Sandpoint. You work in animal control. And how did you come to be there?
I was a later in life. I obtained my Bachelor's of Science in Justice Studies. And so I started as a community resource officer at the City of Sandpoint about 3 years ago. And that includes parking enforcement, animal control, and code enforcement. And so that's how I kind of, you know, became. And with the training that they gave me, now I'm an ACO and animal cruelty investigator, nationally certified.
Way to go. Well, so here we all are together, coming from different backgrounds and perspectives. Susie and me are dealing with feral cats on the ground. Panhandle Animal Shelter, of course, has an ongoing problem, and I imagine the City of Sandpoint gets called about it from time to time. But let's just talk about feral cats in general for a moment. As Susie already mentioned, they're not really a stray cat. They're a cat that's sort of taken up residence in a town, in a rural area, and they don't really belong to anybody. And can one of you tell us how large is the problem in the country? Is it all over? I think it is.
It's very hard to put numbers on wild populations, whether we're talking cats or wild species. So the numbers that estimates are out there for is anything from about 30 million to 160 million cats nationwide. As far as kind of narrowing it down for the area that we're in, the best estimate that we can use is about one cat per seven people. So if we're looking at numbers for Bonner County, it's about 6,500 cats. Boundary County would be having about 200 cats, and then Kootenai County, being a much higher human population, would have about 23,000 cats.
Man, that's a lot of cats. So, and those are the outdoor ones. Those are the feral cats. So it's a lot of cats. And the next question that comes to my mind is, why should we be concerned about them? Are they harmful? Is there any way they're helpful? Let's talk about the harmful aspect of feral cats first. Would one of you like to take that on?
Well, I think a lot of people, you know, for a lot of people, they're nuisances. You know, they're going to the bathroom in their yards for the people who don't have cats. A lot of people in town feed the feral cats, so they attract more cats, and then eventually, because they're not spayed and neutered, then they're, you know, for having kittens, and it's just kind of creating more of a problem for the people who don't have cats and in the areas.
Yeah. Susie, what was your main concern about them?
Well, I wanted to back up just a little bit. Julie, you kind of alluded to what a feral cat is, but is there a definitive description of a feral cat? Because I think the domestic cats can kind of cross in, can become a stray cat, can become part of a feral cat community. I know that a few years ago, there was a citizens initiative group that tried to tackle it. And one person, her name's Judy Lundeck, and she said that there was one small little area that had 200 cats that they worked really hard to get control of. Devin, you might remember working with Judy.
Yeah.
And it never ends. So how would you define the feral cats? And then what makes it become a colony, as you just said? And where are we at with what we know right now in town, say? We can talk with Officer Tennyson about that.
Okay, you cut out for a little bit. Can you kind of repeat the question, please?
Okay, you bet. So I'm just looking to see what is a definitive description of what feral cats really are. What does it look like in our community at this time? Do we have a grasp of what's going
well,
on?
Well, we like to call them more community cats than we do feral cats. Because because so many of them are fed by people. And there's also a lot of owner cats that are around them too. I believe the studies are that the average cat kind of travels what within the three house radius of its home. So we do have, and there's certain areas of the city that have more of them than others. And basically that is because of the people that are feeding them. The most complaints that I get is just the animals, the cats in general. I get them when some of them are sick. So I try to go catch the ones that are sick. We don't have a cat program, or we don't pick up cats in Sandpoint. You don't have to have them licensed, and not, unlike a dog where you have to have it licensed. So the cats can, because there is so many, they run around, and it mostly gets to people who don't have the cats, and they're going to the bathrooms in their gardens and in their bushes and their landscaping and things like that. That's what I tend to get the most complaints about.
Sure. And so we've heard about some of the negatives of feral cats. I'm just wondering, are there any positives of the community cats? There must be one or two positives. Would either Dr. Emily or Devin like to take that on?
Outside of really providing companionship, to people who do take an interest, to feeding and caring for cat colonies, I think that for some people, they are important, in their worlds, and they do provide them with, that companionship just being able to care for them. But outside of really, that rodent control, has been argued. in terms of like even barn cats, when we have a feral cat that comes into the shelter and we identify that it's not domesticated and needs to go back out into a environment that's conducive to the behavior, that we're observing, people flock to them because they go into a barn and they're going to provide, mouse control for it. But those are pretty much the only two things that I can come up with. I don't know if Emily has anything else that she wants to.
The one point that I would add to this part is it's kind of reshifting our view that outdoor community cats are not the same as pet cats. They really are wildlife in the area. And so we have to look at them as wildlife, and where I wouldn't look at my pet cat and ask, like, what's the pros and cons of having you? It's a different approach to wild animals. I don't look at squirrels and wonder what benefit they are to me. And what goes along with wild animals is the idea of resource allocation. So if there are no outdoor cats using the resources, something else is going to move in and use them, whether that's rodents or other types of wildlife. So there's those issues with the human-wildlife interface, regardless of the species that we're discussing.
Yeah. Okay. So it's sort of a readjustment of our thinking about these type of cats. I see where you're going with that. And people do have different attitudes about what to do with community or feral cats. And let's just move on into that and talk about what some of the options are.
The first one that comes to mind for us, especially as an organization that provides trap, neuter, return, is, the spaying and neutering of community cats and re-releasing them back to where they were trapped. And that, again, doesn't necessarily solve the perceived problem of someone who opposes having cats in their community, but it does stop the procreation piece and, of course, the numbers continuing to climb from year to year.
Yeah, and do you view that as the number one solution?
I do, personally, from an animal welfare standpoint, absolutely. I think it's the most humane thing that we have to offer these cats.
Okay.
So the spay or the trap and neuter and return program has been on hold during the COVID situation at the Panhandle Animal Shelter. What is the new status and how does that program work and when is it coming back?
Yeah, it has pained us to do that. Obviously, we've had a pretty steady track, you know, record with trap neuter return over the years. And I would say, you know, from when I started here at the shelter and we, you know, initiated that program to, you know, when we had to discontinue it because of COVID, we were actually seeing, you know, a decrease in the number of cats coming in to the shelter. And we attributed that, you know, probably to our proactive approach to spaying and neutering colony, you know, cats and of course, own cats as well. It's been a challenge with COVID. We really are competing with human medicine for resources. And of course, just with this being a human crisis, they win automatically. We were told, you know, by a lot of organizations that really kind of determine best practices for animal welfare to shelter in place and to discontinue spaying and neutering because, you know, we foresaw shortages in medication supplies. Currently, we can't still to this day get gowns, which are needed for surgery, as well as when we bring kittens into our shelter. In order to safely handle them, we're having to gown and glove in between litters because of, you know, just preventative in terms of illness, not knowing what's coming in, and of course, wanting to protect the population that we have in house. And really not being able to have those resources available to us has limited our ability to help this year. And then the community has been wonderful. It's been an adjustment asking them, you know, really to, if you see a kitten, you know, that needs to go back to its mom, go back to its nest. I understand that you're trying to do what you think is best, but really within this scenario, the best thing that is for that kitten is to go back to where it was found. We realize that we're going to have some catching up to do it's in terms of spaying and neutering, but really it's going to be in the best interest of the cats.
But you're about to get up and running. Is that true?
You know, we're hoping, but even still, we just had another update that came out that said, you know, that there's still drug shortages now. And these are drugs that we use in our anesthetic protocol for surgery. So if we will operate, obviously, within the means that are available to us, but if we foresee, you know, at any point that we've got shortages coming down that are going to affect us, then the biggest thing is preserving those drugs, really all of the resources, all of the supplies that we have for animals that come in that are of a higher priority, sick, injured. You know, there's a lot of things that come in that really need an immediate medical attention versus spaying and neutering.
Okay, so maybe not quite up and running or up and running as you're able, which brings me to a question for Officer Tennyson. Officer Tennyson, when you and I talked on the phone, you had mentioned that there might be some other resources for folks outside of Sandpoint. Tell us what you know about that.
Well, outside of Sandpoint, there is, what is the name of that program that you have? That works with communities outside of Sandpoint.
Is it Pets for Life?
I think so. It's Pets for Life, and it works with more rural areas to help with the cat population in those areas. It helps to spay and neuter. It's a spay, neuter, and release program also.
It may be a different program that you're speaking of. I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm. So for Sandpoint, what I've been working on and try to, I don't really know that much about for outside of the community of Sandpoint because I'm law enforcement in the city of Sandpoint. We're working on, I'm working on a program to try to get either work with the shelter or other vets maybe once a month and to have the citizen or residents of Sandpoint bring in their cats or you know, the feral could have a trap and release and do the same thing, span, neuter, and then release them back. It's just a matter of finding, working with different vets in the area. And I talked to Devin about it, and we're going to try to work together at the shelter to get it at a low cost And if I have to go out and to raise money and raise awareness of it, I will do that. If I have to donate my own money to help spay and neuter these cats, I will do that too. So it's just, it's such a process right now. It's in the beginning stages of it, because at this point we can't really do anything because everything's on hold with COVID.
Yeah, it's a tough problem right now. Susie would like to comment.
Well, I was just going to add, when you were talking, Officer Tennyson, about your own money, both Julie and I are willing to pay for the spay and neutering of some of these community cats or these feral cats that are around my house, because it's not just that they're a nuisance or that they're killing birds and wildlife. It's that it's a kind thing to do, because the cruelty of all these kittens and being out in the winter weather that's coming and not having shelter and food is part of the big reason for me is to be kind to the animals and to stop this progression of more and more cats in the neighborhood. So, I mean, we're willing to pay for the,
well,
for
the medical, you know, the procedure. The more that we get to contribute to it, the more it'll be much easier for to get the job done.
It was for us, we actually even caught a cat, but there was no place to take the cat. And so we had to let it go because there was no vet. So that program that you're talking about, where the community would come together, the veterinary medical community, along with people such as yourself who are working on this situation, or maybe there would be another citizens initiative like Judy put together a few years ago, and we could all work together and we could even do some fundraising.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I think so. Because it just seemed to Susie and me that there wasn't an organized way to solve the problem. Even if residents were willing and able to catch these feral cats, we didn't find that there was a even relatively easy way to get that little feral community cat to a vet and get it spayed and returned, unless we wanted to wait about a week. And that seemed unreasonable to Susie and me. We didn't want to leave our little feral kitty cat in the trap for a week. I see Devin would like to comment.
Yeah, and we agree, like, leaving a cat in a humane trap is not humane for right. A week. We would never recommend that. And I want to say that, you know, we recognize as a shelter that we are a community resource for trap, neuter, and return. And part of the bigger picture for us in having a full-time veterinarian and bringing Emily on was to facilitate the spaying and neutering of cats more regularly and, you know, thus eliminating the need to wait that week. So we foresee in the future that once we're able to, you know, start trap, neuter, and return back up, we're going to have a much different impact on the community and be way more available to get these guys, you know, altered and then back out to where they're at. One other thing that I just wanted to touch on, if it's okay, Julie, is, you know, there is this, I'm going to say, misconception that feral cats will die without human interaction, feeding them. Like you said, you know, you feel it's cruel for cats and kittens to live their lives outside and, you know, have to fend basically for themselves. But as Dr. Emily had touched on earlier, these are wild animals, and there is this idea that we have to feed them in order to help them survive. And that's not true. It is actually crueler for us to trap a cat and try to even domesticate it, especially your adults, you know, as a true feral cat. The stresses of that process really are inhumane, in our opinion. And, you know, the best thing too is if they're a nuisance and you have people in your area feeding them, is to stop feeding them. They will move on and they will find their own food source and live out their lives. So it's not something that we necessarily have to be a part of.
Yeah, got it. Well, so as we come to the end of the interview, just any suggestions? It sounds like we're coming to a place where we may be able to do more in terms of spaying and neutering community cats. COVID has slowed that process. But for listeners, just at the moment and looking into the future, what are your recommendations for how they might best deal with their feral cat populations? I'm hearing that stopping feeding them is one thing. Any other items? And then we'll conclude.
Yeah, so it's really, like, as far as what individual people can do about community cats coming onto their properties and causing a nuisance is to remove the things that are attracting cats. Food is a big one, and that's not necessarily just cat food. It can be garbage that's not stored securely, really anything that you think a feral animal might be interested in eating. Something else that attracts cats is the fact that a nice fenced in backyard with a porch to hide under is a very safe spot to be. So removing like hiding places for them, if you can, you know, cover access to underneath your porch, all of that kind of stuff will encourage cats to go and find somewhere else to spend their time and to feel safe and find food that's not in your backyard and kind of causing trouble.
Okay.
Kind of the same steps that you would do to keep out raccoons and skunks.
Sure. Not leaving out food and not making a place for them to be comfortable. Makes sense. Well, I think this has been a great time for us to talk about the kind of ongoing concern about our community cats. And I want to thank our guests that have joined us today. And they have been Panhandle Animal Shelters, Devin Laundrie, thank you, Devin, Director of Shelter and Medical Operations, Dr. Emily Pellet, who's the new shelter veterinarian, and Officer Angela Tennyson, who works in animal control. I just want to thank you all for sharing your information and your expertise on sort of a puzzling, perplexing, I'm having trouble with that word, problem of the community cat around Sandpoint and outside of Sandpoint. And Susie, I want to thank you for, Susie Perez, thank you for sharing your experience with us.
Yeah, it's been really enlightening. I think the feeding aspect and keeping areas in your yard not accessible to these animals was good to know. But keep KRFY in mind when you do have some solutions or you want to get some more information out there. We can do a little 10-minute mini interview and put it on one of our community conversation podcasts. Also, this interview today, just so our listeners know, will be podcast on krfy.org later in the day. So,
yes,
and thank
it will.
You for joining
yes.
us.
Well, I do want to thank everyone, and this has been KRFY Community Conversations, the alternative to our usual KRFY morning show, and we've had a great time talking about the perplexing puzzle of feral cats. I hope you enjoyed this program, and I hope you'll tune in again next week. Thank you all for joining us.